the inbox is not the first thing I look at in the morning. Because that triggers the my limbic system, the alarm centers of my brain, that fight, flight, or freeze response, which takes me out of the flow state, the prefrontal cortex-driven productive mode. So by not doing that first thing in the morning, it kind of creates a brain state that sets the tone for my day.
This is the Entrepology Podcast. The podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, a body balance, and inner badass. These are the themes we are exploring. So today is the second of a two-part series that we are doing all about brain health and productivity. And I am joined today by a neuroscience and psychologist, Dr. Kristen Race. Dr. Race has focused her entire career on helping individuals improve their state of mindfulness, both in their own lives and in the corporate setting. And in particular today, we're talking about it in the context of parenting and entrepreneurship. Dr. Race's interview with me today is full of tips that you can start to integrate right away. And what she also does is break down a lot of the misconceptions about what it means to include mindfulness or meditation into your day. If you're looking to increase your productivity and your ability to focus around your kids, your family, and the work that you love, I promise you today's interview was designed especially for you. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Kristen Race. Dr. Kristen Race, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you, Megan. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to have you here. And this is actually the second of a two-part series we've been doing on brain health. And you are just so well positioned to speak to this. Last week, we were talking about quantitative EEGs and some of the really deep science around the brain. And this week, we're going to talk a little bit more about the interface between the psychology and the neuroscience and mindfulness and all of the habits that we can do to help support our optimal existence as entrepreneurs and go-getters. And so before we jump into that, I'm hoping that you can give my audience a little bit of a background on you. How did we even get to the point that we're having this conversation here today?
It's very interesting because I am constantly stunned by the fact that I am having these conversations today because it was not, getting here was not my intention. I call myself an entrepreneur by accident. And it all happened very organically. It started about 15 years ago. I was finishing up my doctorate degree. I had a 18-month-old toddler. I was pregnant with my second child. I was working full-time and writing my dissertation in the evenings, trying desperately to finish before child number two was born. For some reason, my husband and I decided, hey, this would be a great time to remodel our house. So things were absolutely nuts. And I was able to, and interestingly, in my dissertation, I was writing about the neuroscience of stress and thought I was pretty much immune to stress at the time. And I plugged right through. I finished my dissertation, had a beautiful baby boy. And about 3 months later, I had a complete physical, emotional breakdown. It presented itself mostly physically in terms of joint pain, fatigue, all various symptoms that were really hard to identify at first. Fast forward, I eventually was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that was likely triggered by stress. So the irony of that happening to me while I was writing a dissertation about the neuroscience of stress is not lost on me.
The universe is cruel.
Yeah, right? It is. It is, but so real. And then at the same time, something interesting was occurring, which I was working in schools as director of counseling services. And I had a full-time job in a very wealthy, independent, pressure cooker independent school in Denver, Colorado. And then I was volunteering in a high needs, at risk, 95% free and reduced school. And I was incredibly taken by the level of stress in students. And it didn't seem to matter whether they were coming from these poverty-stricken homes where they didn't know where their next meal was coming, or they were pulling up in their Range Rovers, deciding, you know, applying to 50 different Ivy League colleges or however many they could. The level of stress was equal across the board. And so I just began to get really curious about that and what was going on in our society, in our lives, in these kids' lives, that was triggering so much stress and anxiety when they were not living in life-threatening circumstances. So those two things are happening at the same time. I decide that to respond to my diagnosis, I'm going to pack up my family. We are going to move to the mountains of Colorado, to a small ski town, and live in a bubble from away from stress and just sort of, I don't know, drink margaritas and frolic in the mountain fields. I thought it was just going to, we would live happily ever after. And it didn't take long for me to realize that it didn't matter where you lived, what school you went to, how much you were working, what kind of job you had, these little stressors in our modern lives trickle in. And we can't put a bubble around our families and ourselves, but it was really about building resilience from the inside. And that was where I really started to hone in on all of the research I had been invested in on the impact of mindfulness and practices like yoga on enhancing the way our brains function and really building this kind of resilience. So I started with a schools program that I created and delivered myself. That evolved into a lot of research studies, formalizing the curriculum, training teachers. It grew across the country very rapidly, and it was all around using mindfulness practices to help students and teachers build resilience to stress. I then wrote a book called Mindful Parenting, which was addressing this sort of systemic component of what I call generation stress, which I was recognizing as a generation of very stressed out parents raising stressed out kids. And then as I started to give talks, these parenting talks, book talks across the country, I would have people come up to me afterwards saying, can you come speak to my law firm? Can you speak to my medical clinic? Can you come to my YPO event and speak to us about how to build resilience to stress? So I dove into the corporate world and started creating programs for mindfulness in the workplace. And then I've always been really passionate about supporting women and working women, working moms. And interestingly, most recently, I partnered with an integrative beauty company called Solvasa, which is all about helping women to integrate mindfulness into their skincare routines. So something we do every day. So that's sort of the long/short answer of how we got to this conversation. And it's just been a really interesting and fun and organic ride that is exciting because I never know where it's going to take me.
Well, and that is half the fun with all of these different pieces. And there's a lot that we can start to jump into. And I actually want to start on the mindful parent side, because I feel like for so much of our audience, many, if not most of whom are entrepreneurs, a lot of us also simultaneously have children. And one of the things I love about being an entrepreneur is the opportunity to share that journey with my kids and have them understand the freedom that it affords me and affords us. But simultaneous to that, and I have this conversation with my husband all the time, is there's a certain level of stress that accompanies that. There's a great deal of responsibility that accompanies that piece. And we often have these conversations about how do we start to build resilience up in our in our children so that they're viewing these things and not necessarily picking up on all of the stress pieces, or at least we can then have a conversation around those stress pieces. So like how do you start to bridge that gap in terms of the mindful parenting piece to raise mindful children?
Yeah, and there's so much in that question to dive into. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think I'll start with I am right there with you as an entrepreneur. And I think for me, one of the biggest challenges has been, as an entrepreneur, how do we put some boundaries around our work? Because, you know, you're thinking about it 24 hours a day. It's never ending. It's not the type of job where you close, you know, you shut down your computer and you walk out the door and you don't really revisit it until the next day. And actually, not many people have those types of jobs anymore. But I think particularly as an entrepreneur, it occupies a ton of brain space on a daily, nightly basis. And I think that's one of the reasons why mindfulness has become such this pop culture, you see it everywhere, why it's so relevant right now, is because of this 24/7 accessibility that we're all facing in our jobs. And what mindfulness helps us to do is to create some moments in our days where we can acknowledge that those thoughts and those preoccupations are there, but we can set them aside for just a few minutes to get present, to stimulate structures in our brain that are going to help us be productive, be efficient, be engaged with the people that are right in front of us, and also build resilience to all of the stress that comes with being an entrepreneur. So it starts there, I think. And then for what we've done is we integrate a lot of what I would call informal mindfulness. Both my husband and I, in terms of how we work, where we work, when we talk about work, but also little things that we integrate into our interactions with our kids as well. So it's a combination of a lot of stuff, and we can dive into any of those wherever you want to start. But I think it's such a good point that you raise that is unique for people trying to own and run their own business.
So let's start at the very beginning of this whole concept. How do you define mindfulness?
Yeah, that's a great place to start. So I define mindfulness as bringing your awareness to the present moment in systematic ways. And when we do that, so an example would be a mindful breathing practice where you are simply bringing your awareness to your breathing. Each inhalation, each exhalation, your mind wanders off, you notice you've wandered, you come back to the next breath. So that would be paying attention to the breath in systematic ways. You can also practice mindful listening, where you're paying attention to the sounds that you hear. And same thing, just bringing your awareness back and back and back every time you become distracted. You can practice mindful eating. You can practice mindful seeing. So there's all these ways to practice mindfulness. And those practices strengthen certain areas of our brain, which we can dive into, that offsets all of the other things that take us out of the moment. So, you know, all of the little modern triggers of stress we have in our lives, from traffic to cell phone pings and dings to an overloaded Google calendar to trying to get our kids to school on time. So for me, mindfulness is both that those systematic intentional practices, which for me are very short, and very simple. And then it's also integrating little things throughout my day that, as I repeat over time, have a huge impact on my stress level, on my happiness, on my patience with my kids and my husband, and on my productivity, actually, in a lot of ways as well.
So what are some of those things you do throughout the course of the day? And I agree, as a clinician, like, it is the habits that people are doing all the time, good or bad, that I'm really interested in understanding, because consistency builds the canyon. So what does that look like for you?
So for me, it looks like, I'll give you a kind of a typical day. I wake up really early in the morning, around 5, and I wake up to an alarm on a clock, not on my phone, which we can talk about. I go downstairs, I set my coffee to brew, and I spend about 3 to 5 minutes paying attention to my breathing. That stimulates my prefrontal cortex. It sets the tone for my day. I then spend about 3 to 5 minutes in a planner that I actually created and published called the Master Your Life Planner, and in that time, I identify my intention for the day. So how do I want to be in the world today? I identify my top 3 priorities that would make the day a win for me. If I can, you know, check off these top 3 priorities. And then I write down some other tasks I need to take care of, and then I dive into my inbox. And there's a lot of reasons I do that, but to say it succinctly, it allows me to prioritize my priorities rather than reacting to everyone else's priorities, which happens the moment you look at your phone or your email. So that's huge in terms of my morning routine. Around 8:30 in the morning, I usually try to go to yoga. And when I get to my mat, I do a 3-breath micro practice, which is 1 breath you inhale, as you exhale, relax. I take another breath, inhale, and I exhale out any areas of tension that I notice in my body. And on the 3rd, I inhale and I ask myself, what is most important right now? And that allows me to kind of put away the work and the to-dos and whatever's gone on over the course of my morning and really be present in that yoga class so I can get the most out of it. Because I can't solve any other problems while I'm there. So whatever your workout is, you might as well be in it. And then, you know, I have a transition ritual at the end of the day before I pick up my kids from school, which is a cup of tea in the afternoon, which just kind of helps me transition from mindful life, Kristen, to mom. I practice a practice called 3 good things before I go to bed at night. We often practice gratitude around the table as a family. And I try to incorporate some mindfulness into my wind down time before going to bed, into my shower, into my skincare. So it's a lot of little things. That sounds like a lot, but the reality is the only thing that really takes up much time is the mindful breathing in the morning and that morning ritual, which is between 5 and 10 minutes. And I can't tell you how much return on that investment of time I get as I move through the day in a clear, calm, productive, efficient state. And I notice a huge difference on days where I do that routine and days that I don't. Because yes, of course I fall out of that routine. Things happen. I don't get my meditation in. I'm traveling. There's times when it's really hard. But when I am in that routine, there's a profound difference in how my day goes.
Yeah, it's funny. As you were mentioning all that, you're like, it sounds like a lot. And I was actually simultaneously thinking, wow, that's not a lot. Those are such quick little things that are just so tightly integrated into the course of your day that it doesn't actually sound like it really slows you down.
No, it doesn't slow me down at all. And, you know, even little kind of productivity hacks that I've put in place and being mindful of how I check my email and managing notifications and all of those, you know, creating time for deep work, all of those things that I started implementing when I shifted to the corporate setting over the past 5 years, literally have cut between 75 minutes and 2 hours out of my workday because I've become that much more efficient and productive.
Okay.
So it's pretty profound.
I want to segue from this idea of mindfulness, and we're going to come back to it, and your inbox. What are some of the things that you have done? Because I feel like it's just a test case for pulling people out of a state of mindfulness every single time you go in there. Some days I just don't even do my inbox because I know it's going to derail any of the things I actually want to get done.
Right. So for me, it starts with that morning routine in terms of the inbox is not the first thing I look at in the morning. Mm-hmm. because that triggers the my limbic system, the alarm centers of my brain, that fight, flight, or freeze response, which takes me out of the flow state, the prefrontal cortex-driven productive mode. So by not doing that first thing in the morning, it kind of creates a brain state that sets the tone for my day. I then have designated times when I go into that inbox rather than just checking it every time I feel like it. I will check it in the morning, I'll check it after lunch, and I'll check it at the end of the workday. And unless I, you know, say I have a podcast interview and the person's not showing up, then maybe I would check it just to see if I have a message. But other than that, I stay out of my inbox. I think having a signature in your inbox that says when you check, you know, I check my email 3 times a day, I will get back to you within 48 hours. If you have an emergency, you can contact X, Y, and Z. So just giving the person who's emailed you the letting them know the expectations for response time. I don't think people care if you don't get back to them for 24 hours. They just want to know you're going to get back to them at a certain time. And there's a misconception that we have to respond immediately to every text, to every email that comes our way. And altering that and just giving people the proper expectations for what they can expect from you has a huge impact on our productivity. Because the other thing that happens is if we're trying to work on something, on a project, and you respond to the text on your phone or that little pop-up email that comes up on the right side of your computer, when we try to multitask like that, it completely slows our brain down. We notice a significant impact on our performance in terms of the amount of mistakes that we make, how quickly we get work done. And our brains aren't designed to multitask. They're really designed to focus on one thing at a time. Each time we switch back and forth, we have to go back about 3 or 4 steps and then catch up to just get to where we were. And this is a huge challenge for people these days. There's research shows that if you're working in an office, you're likely interrupted about every 3 minutes. And Wow. It then takes people 25 minutes to get back on task. So when you think about that from a productivity standpoint, there's so much room to get really dialed in and get so much more productive, and not just productive, but efficient with your time.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the auto reply. So I have an auto reply that that goes out to people. And for a long time, I would get teased by my corporate friends. They're like, this just would not stand at my company. Yeah. And the irony was, is I treated a significant number of employees from this one company in particular. And I said, well, why wouldn't it? And they're like, oh, there's an expectation of communication and it interrupts our productivity and how we get back to clients. And I said, listen, you know, I'm treating at least 15 to 20 people from your company. And I can tell you they are so stressed by the expectations that are placed upon them to do that, that they are sitting at their desk day in and day out, not accomplishing anything because right. they don't know where to start. They are so stuck in fight or flight. So I said, what you think is actually something that is productive, I said, is completely misaligned to the outcome that you are after. So there's so many of these old rules that are pervasive, and we're trying to balance, you know, the needs of our boss with what actually makes us productive.
100%. And it's really interesting because some of the companies that are bringing me in that are, you know, kind of these pressure cooker type environments are now instilling policies against that. So they're creating policies like no email Saturdays, meaning you're not allowed to email anybody in your company on a Saturday. So they're having to get that. They're starting to realize the impact on their employees and the productivity, and they're implementing these, you know, kind of these policies to counter it, because it's become such a part of the culture that they actually have to create a policy to get people to change their behavior around those things. So it's really fascinating.
So while we're on the subject of behavior, talk to me a little bit about the rules that you have imposed for yourself and for the people you're working with around their phones.
Sure. So certainly, for me with my phone, I have I create an airplane mode most days, most every day, which is a time where I focus on deep work. So content writing, speech writing, those kinds of things that require a lot of focus and attention. And I will put that on my Google Calendar, airplane mode, and which my team sees, so they know not to call me or to, they can email me, but they know I'm not going to respond during that time. And I turn my phone off. I make sure all notifications on my computer are off, and I dive into deep work. And it's amazing the amount of work that I can get done, right, in that 90 minutes or that 2 hours. And for some people, their airplane mode may be 45 minutes. But you can get an incredible amount of work done when you are just focused on that number one priority of your day. Other things that around the phone, obviously, I don't have the phone in my room. I don't wake up to the alarm on my smartphone. I have, as soon as kind of when I wind down my work day and shift into that after school mom mode, and this isn't realistic for a lot of people, but I really put my phone away. I plug it into the charger, which is in a desk area in our house, and I don't look at it. I don't touch it. We have a no phones policy at the dinner table in any restaurant, both for my husband and I and our kids. And then I don't look at my phone after 7 o'clock at night because I know it will trigger that stress response for me. And so I have a kind of a shutdown process. I go through at the end of the day, checking any messages, checking any emails. And if there's an emergency, that people close to me know to call me. So it will still ring, but I'm not going to respond to a text or an email after a certain time. Now, that's pretty, I've been doing this for a while, and that may seem pretty extreme for people, but I encourage people just something like, you know, when your work day ends, if you work in an office outside the home and you come home, can you put your phone away for 30 minutes, 60 minutes when you walk in the door? Literally put it in a drawer so you don't even see it. And spend that time either engaging with the people that are in your house, with your pet, with your kids, enjoying some downtime for yourself. Because our brains need that time to not be constantly scanning the environment for the next ping or ding or thing that's going to pop up on a screen. And that just, it allows our prefrontal cortex, this super important part of our brain, to rest, to rejuvenate, to recharge. And we can become much more engaged, feel more balanced in our brains, therefore balanced in our lives.
They say that you are the product of the five people with whom you spend the most time. Imagine you could spend time with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs and go-getters looking to uplevel their business, body, and mindset. The Entrepology Collective does not belong to us. It belongs to you. Come hang out with us on Facebook and let us collectively inspire, support, and cheerlead you towards your vision for contribution, your commitment towards better health, and your journey of mindset mastery. We are in this together. We are entrepreneurs by birth, by choice, and by mission. We are the Entrepology Collective. Search for us on Facebook and come join your tribe. I really like that advice. And there's two things in that you've mentioned that I really found interesting. One, you talk about this shutdown process at the end of the day. And you also mentioned that if you're working from home, you have this ritual that you do when you transition from working at home to going and getting your kids. Can you comment on both of those pieces? Because you mentioned them in passing, but I think they're actually really, really significant pieces sure. to include over the course of your day, both on a neurological level and on a psychological level. And then I'll share a little story about that for myself.
Yeah. And actually the two rituals are somewhat combined, but essentially the shutdown ritual, I call it my digital sunset. And so it's when my workday is over, I check my email one last time. I look at my calendar. I go back to that paper planner that I mentioned, and I write down my top three priorities for tomorrow. And that just allows me to write it down and to let it go. I know when I wake up in the morning, I open my planner, I'm going to see that first thing, and maybe it may have shifted. Those three things may have changed, but more likely than not, I've got a starting point. I know what my focus is for the day, and I can let it go for that evening. So I literally turn my computer off. I put my phone, I plug it into the charger. And so that's my digital sunset, my shutdown process at the end of the day. You know, for my husband, I go to bed early because I get to wake up early. For him, he's present at dinner. He's with the kids. Once the kids go up to go to bed, then he often goes back to work. And then he has his own kind of system for shutting down, which occurs about an hour before he goes to sleep. So, you know, he'll have the home time with the family. He'll go back to work for a few hours. That's when his brain works great late at night. Mine does not. And then he'll shut that down and either read or watch some TV or do something that's relaxing for him before bed. So that's my digital sunset. My transition ritual came from this really fascinating woman speaker that I was speaking at a wellness conference, and she was speaking also. She was 95 years old, and she talked about how she had this ritual of a cup of tea mid-morning and mid-afternoon. And it was time where she would just sit and relax with her cup of tea and take a few breaths and take a mindful moment. And I loved that. And so I started doing that initially when my kids were younger. I would make the cup of tea and I would get in the car, leave my phone at home, and I would drink the cup of tea on the way to pick up my kids from school. And so that was kind of my transition ritual. Now I have teenagers. They come home at various times. One of them drives. So my transition ritual is still that cup of tea, but I have that cup of tea in my office as I'm going through my digital sunset. And then I drink my cup of tea and I move from my office into my kitchen, which is separated by one door. And it just allows me to mentally shift from work to home, because it's so easy to walk out of my office. And I don't even have a commute. So I'm walking right into the kitchen and I still have all of this mental baggage from what's happened in my workday or what I'm thinking about with work. And I think we really have to be intentional about how we quiet that and move and shift roles. And for some people, that might be you walking the dog when you get home from the office. It could be changing your clothes. I worked with first responders, and there was a police officer who talked about how his process of changing out of his uniform and into his street clothes was a significant transition ritual for him to let go of that stressed, alert state that he was in all day to being a dad. So whatever that ritual might look like, I think it looks different for different people, but it can be incredibly helpful. You know, especially in times where we are always accessible, right? It's hard to separate work and home.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I had this experience last year, and I've spoken about this on the podcast before, but I was measuring my heart rate variability with a new device that we had for our practice. And I was noticing that every day at the end of my workday, before I'd go pick up my kids from school and daycare, my heart rate variability would drop like a stone. And I actually found at the end of the day, I was getting more anxious. And I was really curious about that. I first noticed it on my HRV. And then when I really tapped in, I was like, it's not the time of day I would expect. And then I was doing some reading from Brendon Burchard, and he was talking a lot about high performers needing to create intentional transitional phases as they move from one sort of area of mental discipline into another. And so I started to incorporate that. And what was so interesting is, one, I wasn't as short with my kids, and two, my heart rate variability stayed really, really high. So it wasn't necessarily my kids that were stressing me out. It was the different expectations of these different roles and environments. And I saw that so cleanly, both from an evidence perspective, but I can also just feel it in my body. So that ritual is so, and that transitional ritual for me is so critical at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you're right. It's physical and emotional. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious. So what did you put into place?
I really just take 5 minutes and I step away from my computer and I set an intention for how I want to show up as a parent. And I learned this little hack from my friend Todd Herman, and he said when he comes home at night, he puts on a bracelet. And it's like his parenting bracelet. And when he catches himself pulling into like thinking about work or not being focused, he sort of snaps it on his wrist. So I picked a bracelet that I wear when I'm home with my kids. And it's just a visual cue for me. And it's a visual cue for them that if I'm distracted, they're allowed to snap that bracelet too. And so it's just, it's not a full change in uniform, but it is a change in intent for sure.
I love that. And those little things can be incredibly powerful. I love it.
Yeah. And, you know, as you're talking about this and you're speaking to mindfulness, you know, all the little things you were talking about seem so easy. And I think for a lot of people, there's this confusion between mindfulness and meditation, and they lump them together. They make this assumption that meditation's not for them. And so they ignore this entire discipline. Can you just shed some light on the difference between mindfulness and meditation so that people aren't missing out on this opportunity because they're biting off more than they can chew?
Sure. So for me, I think mindfulness is a way of being in the world, being mindful, being aware, right? And it's a skill that can be developed through a mindful meditation. So meditation is a practice that people use to develop that skill of being present and engaged and aware of what's going around on not only around you, but inside your head. I think Dan Harris likes to say it's the ability to know what's going on inside your head without getting carried away by it. And it is a skill that we have to develop because our natural tendency of our brains is to go into this default network, which is thinking about the past, thinking about the future, judging ourselves and how we compare to others, and basically kind of clicking into autopilot. So we have to work on being mindful. And meditation is a practice that can be used essentially. I talk about it. It's like bicep curls for your brain. Specifically your prefrontal cortex, which is the part of our brain that you need to be present and engaged and clear. And when we practice a meditation, then that part of we're stimulating our prefrontal cortex. That part of our brain becomes stronger. It becomes more efficient in the same way that if you were doing a bunch of bicep curls, your bicep would become stronger and more efficient. So you can strengthen these key structures of your brains through these practices. And I think one of the misconceptions with meditation is a big misconception is, oh, you have to clear your mind. I can't do that. My mind is way too busy. And that's the biggest myth out there. The idea with mindfulness meditation is not to clear your mind. It's to bring your mind to one point of focus and to hold it there. And when it wanders off, which it will again and again and again, you start over. You come back to that point. You come back to that point. You come back to that point, whatever that point of focus is. And each time you come back, that's like doing reps in a gym. You're strengthening those neural pathways each time you come back. You're creating what I call meta attention, so attention of your attention. And so I think those are the big differences. What I love about mindfulness is it can be practiced formally in the form of a meditation. But what I tend to use most and what I tend to teach most are these little informal practices that you can do throughout your day that are like little boosts of energy to your prefrontal cortex. So as an example, that three breath micro practice that I mentioned that I do at beginning of a yoga class, mm-hmm. or that I might do at the beginning of a meeting, or that I might do before a podcast interview, that's a 30 second to a minute practice that is just kind of reboots my prefrontal cortex. You know, gratitude is a 2 minute practice that is going to stimulate your left prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain responsible for positive emotions. So there's all these little things, little doses that we can give ourselves throughout the day to maintain that steady flow of energy in that prefrontal cortex, that really important part of our brain.
Yeah, I love this advice. And I'd love for you to share too, because we've got the morning piece and we've got these little moments that we can start to take. Can you share a little bit about what you talked about at the beginning, and that's incorporating mindfulness into your skincare regime?
Sure. So this has been something that's been fascinating for me, because I was always big about how can I incorporate mindfulness into my workout, something I that's important for me to do every day. And then when I started working with Silvassa Beauty, and they brought up this notion of, you know, helping women create beauty from the inside out. So using mindfulness to take care of yourselves internally, and then also combining mindfulness with these amazing skincare products to take care of ourselves externally, and something that we do. And so the ways that I have been using that is with, there's this amazing cleansing mask that they've created. And so I will put that on my face at night, and it would be easy to then walk around and fold the wash, or for a lot of people, I would guess, dive into your social media feed or whatever while you wait a few minutes for that to dry. But I will put it on my face, I let it dry, and I write down 3 to 5 things I'm grateful for in my gratitude journal, and then rinse it off. There's this distressants serum that I put on my skin, and I actually use this a lot for brain breaks throughout the day when I'm in my office. I keep it in my office, and so I will put that on my face, and then they have a crystal wand massager, and so I will take some deep breaths as I massage the distressants into the skin on my face. And for me, I hold a ton of tension. I think it all goes to my forehead and my temples. So just by taking a moment to do that, I'm doing something that's great for my skin and my face, but I'm also getting this little dose of mindfulness. And there are all kinds of things and products that are in the works that are, I think, going to be really interesting for people to be able to, again, bring those little micro practices into something that they do on a daily basis.
Yeah, I love that. And it's just a different way of reminding you and triggering you to take these steps, which are just so accessible to all of us.
Absolutely. Yes.
A quick note from our sponsor, Badass Fuel. 2 years ago, someone asked me what supplements I take to maintain my health, my energy, and my edge, and they were surprised that I only took 4 things consistently. For myself and my patients, there are 4 basics that support, at a foundational level, nearly every system in our body. In my quest for the highest quality ingredients and the easiest system for consistently incorporating supplementation into my routine, I formulated and manufactured my own line of foundational supplements. My intention with this line was first and foremost quality, but equally important was a system for taking and naming the support that eased the incorporation of supplements into your life. Trusted for myself and my patients, under the guidance of your own healthcare provider, I'm excited to invite you to check out our foundational product line, Badass Basics. You can learn more or order the products yourself by visiting www.badassfuel.com. There's so much to start to break apart here, and I feel like we're either going to do this all day long, or we're going to make a transition in this interview to something that I call our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our lives as well. So if you'll indulge me, I've got a few rapid fire questions so that our audience can understand just a little bit more of what goes on behind the scenes in your day.
I love it.
All right, first one for you. What's the most impactful book you've ever read?
The most impactful book I've ever read. You know, it's funny. What is coming to mind for me, and I couldn't describe the plot if you asked me, but I remember just being really impacted by a book called The Education of Little Tree. And I read it in my 20s, and it would actually, I think one of the reasons it was so impactful was because on one of the first dates with my husband, he brought up this, or who became my husband, he brought up this book that he loved, and I had never heard of anybody else reading it or anything else about it. And so it became this kind of point of connection. So because I'm now married to him, I'd have to identify that as one of the most impactful books I've read.
I love that. And I'm just going to throw in here, one of the things I find so interesting is that typically my guests will say that they are nonfiction readers. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting, when people start to talk about the books that had the greatest impact on them, often they were fiction or historical fiction or an autobiography. So it's really interesting what's having an impact on that visceral level for people.
Right. That emotional level, mm-hmm. I think. You're right. Yeah.
What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Exercise, physical exercise. I would like to say it's my meditation practice. And I know, you know, that's probably second, but the physical exercise is equally as more, more important, more consistent for me, I would say.
I love that. What's something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I am pretty fearless when it comes to doing crazy adventures. When I was in college, I worked for a bungee jumping company. And one of the things that I would do every morning when I arrived at work was be the first person to jump out of the crane to show people that were in line that the ropes really worked. And so I spent one summer, I bungee jumped over 100 times that summer. And so I love things like that, like rock climbing, big hikes, crazy endurance events, those types of things.
Okay, that's a really good answer. What do you do for fun or play?
Ski, mountain bike, and watch my kids play sports. I love that.
Amazing. And last question for you, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I learned to become an entrepreneur. I never thought I would be an entrepreneur. So I can only speak for myself, but it's hard to imagine being anything else now once you are an entrepreneur. But for me, it was an idea that I had to follow, and I don't think anything else could compare to the passion that I have for it.
Well, I'm so glad you were able to share your passion with us today. Dr. Kristen Reyes, if people want to follow up with you, and I know they will, where can we send them to learn more about what you're up to?
Sure. So you can certainly follow me at Dr. Kristen Reyes on Instagram. My personal website where there's information on my programs, my books, my speaking is kristenreyes.com. And then you can learn more about Silvassa Beauty products at silvassabeauty.com.
Amazing. And we're going to hook everybody up in the show notes. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Megan. I had a great time talking to you.
Hey, hey, bosses. If that interview resonated with you, I would love your feedback over on Apple Podcasts. Every single review, every comment you leave makes a huge difference in terms of the Entrepology Podcast being able to reach more people, help more people, and pull more individuals into our vector and vertical of leadership that we are using to try to change the world. Now, if you want to discuss a little bit more about today's topic or other topics that affect us as leaders and go-getters in this world, come on over and hang out with me in the Entrepology Collective. In this Facebook group, we have women from around the world dedicated to living a life of purpose, a healthy life, an intentional life as we cruise through and engage in our missions here on planet Earth. I would love for you to join us. I'm excited about what you do. Until we meet again next week, go build something amazing.